play at another show, because we do have to wrap up. And I appreciate you with the gentle touch, you know, just coming to people, meeting them halfway where they're at. Because that's, I think, a lot of what we're seeing is fueled from the fear of the unknown. And let's not forget the 2020 census will be the proof of the pudding that the world and the state, the country, is changing dramatically, drastically. And so
truly,
we're gonna have to see all that representation sooner than later, right? Yeah, that's my two cents. Oh, see, yeah, this has been a great discussion, Tanya West.
Yeah,
Angels,
thank
Johnny
you, Tammy.
Appreciate
thank
you.
You, Sonia. Thank you, our lovely listeners. We will be back same time next week.
Yay! See ya. Some of them men think they freak just like we do, but no, they don't. Make your check come at their neck. Disrespect us, no, they won't. Boy, don't even try to touch this. Boy, this beat is crazy. This is how they made me. Houston, Texas, baby. This goes out to all my girls. I'm in the club rocking the ladies. Who will buy it for themselves and get more money later? I think I need a barber. None of these niggas play me. I'm so good with this. I remind you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sojourner True. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today on Sojourner Truth, a wide-ranging and in-depth conversation with Brazil-based Winnie Overbeck, the coordinator of the World Forest Movement, a network supporting forest-dependent communities who are struggling to defend their territories in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. We discuss the COVID crisis in Brazil and its impact on indigenous communities who live in the Amazon rainforest, and also its impact on other vulnerable populations. We also discuss the threat to the rainforest by fires and land grabs. Also, attacks on quilombolas, Afro-Brazilian land, the growing concern and resistance to multinational corporations establishing mega forest plantations, displacing villagers in Africa and Asia. Also, racism in Brazil and the Black Lives Matter movement there, and more. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. The U.S. set a new one-day record for reported coronavirus cases, more than 60,000 in a 24-hour period. The number of new reported cases has risen by 72% over the last 2 weeks and now totals more than 3 million, with more than 132,000 deaths. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, infectious disease specialist Dr. Anthony Fauci warned the situation could get worse. He said the experience of the southern states seeing the worst spike should be a lesson to other states reopening their economies.
What we were seeing is exponential growth. It went from an average of about 20,000 to 40 and 50,000. That's doubling. If you continue doubling, 2 times 50 is 100. A lesson to the other cities and states that when you open and reopen, take a really good look at the guidelines, and in your quest to get things open quickly, don't jump over the guideposts, don't jump over the checkpoints. Do it in a measured way.
President Trump threatened on Twitter to cut off federal funds to schools that don't reopen in the fall. He also criticized the existing Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines for reopening schools as tough, expensive, and impractical. Vice President Mike Pence said the CDC will issue new guidelines. Still, the nation's largest school district in New York City said most students will return to their physical classrooms 2 or 3 days per week and learn online the rest of the time. Mayor Bill de Blasio said schools can't accommodate all their students at any one time while also maintaining physical distancing. Los Angeles County's public health director urged local school officials to prepare for a possible delay of classroom instruction next month. In Houston, officials have canceled the Texas Republican Party's in-person convention. They say the spread of the coronavirus makes it impossible to hold the event as scheduled. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner said the city's lawyers exercised provisions in the contract that the Texas Republican Party signed to rent the downtown convention center for a 3-day event, which was to have started July 16th. Virus cases have surged in Texas, particularly in Houston and the state's largest cities. Republican Governor Greg Abbott had publicly deferred to state party leaders who last week voted to go forward with an in-person event. The state Republican Party chair said the party was weighing its legal options. He accused the mayor of trying to deny the Republicans' critical electoral function. The fight over whether thousands of Republican supporters will converge on downtown Houston as the city's hospitals are overwhelmed is a snapshot of the broader political tensions that have underscored that state's handling of the pandemic. The U.S. Supreme Court set to rule today on whether Congress and the Manhattan District Attorney can see President Trump's tax returns and the other financial records Trump has fought hard to keep secret. The high-stakes dispute tests the balance of power between the White House and Congress, as well as Trump's claim he can't be investigated while in office. It's unclear, even if Trump loses, how much of the material would become public. Trump has so far lost at every step, but the records have not been turned over pending a final court ruling. More than 1.3 million newly unemployed workers applied for jobless benefits last week. It was a continuation of the historically high pace that shows many employers are still laying people off in the face of the coronavirus pandemic. The persistently elevated level of layoffs are occurring as a spike in virus cases has forced 6 states to reverse their move to reopen businesses. Those 6, California, Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Michigan, and Texas, make up 1/3 of the U.S. economy. The number of those applying for jobless benefits now has topped 1 million for 16 straight weeks. Last week, an additional 1 million people sought benefits under a separate program for self-employed and gig workers that has made them eligible for aid for the first time. Before the pandemic, the record high for weekly unemployment applications was fewer than 700,000 during the days of the Great Recession. The United Nations Weather Agency says the world could see average global temperatures rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius for the first time in the coming 5 years. That's 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit. The 1.5 Celsius mark is the level to which countries have agreed to try to limit global warming. I'm Eileen Alfandari for Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. In Brazil, just like in the United States, poor and vulnerable communities are being hit hard by 3 interconnected crises: ecological devastation, COVID-19, and systemic racism. Similarly, both countries are run by right-wing leaders who are worsening these problems with their racist and profit-driven policies. In the Amazon region, logging, mining, and deforestation continue to threaten the survival of its rainforests. The Amazon produces up to 20% of the oxygen in Earth's atmosphere and cycles water that regulates a global weather patterns. It is also home to more than 30 million people and over 10% of the world's biodiversity. Unfortunately, between 15 and 17% of the Amazon rainforest has been lost, this according to Brazil's National Institute for Space Research. If the amount of cleared forest land reaches 25%, there won't be enough trees cycling moisture through the rainforest, causing the rainforest to dry out into a savanna. Deforestation in Brazil's Amazon increased 22% in the first 5 months of this year compared to the same period of 2019, according to the Associated Press. Not only are logging, mining, and deforestation forcing the indigenous peoples of the Amazon to leave their lands for greener pastures, but there's also growing concern about the public health of indigenous communities in the Amazon, where dozens of people have already contracted COVID-19 from outsiders. Most indigenous communities have not yet received personal protection equipment from the government to protect themselves from the fast-spreading virus. Much like Donald Trump, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has completely mishandled the COVID-19 public health emergency. To date, there have been over 67,000 reported deaths, actually closer to 68,000 reported deaths, and at least 1.7 million reported cases of the deadly virus in Brazil, this according to the Washington Post. Brazil is now the second worst impacted country in terms of reported deaths and cases, with the United States in first place. Bolsonaro, who previously called it a little flu and claimed it was being over exaggerated by the media, now himself has contracted COVID-19. And according to investigative journalism agency Agencia Publica, the death rate for Black Brazilians is higher than for other populations. We also have to keep in mind that Brazil has the largest population of people of African descent, of Black people, outside of a country like Nigeria, the largest in the Western Hemisphere. Poverty, pollution, and a lack of access to quality health care have forced Black people in Brazil to bear the brunt of the crisis. Many Afro-Brazilians live in crowded favelas or shanty towns in which large numbers of people are forced to live in cramped and often unsanitary conditions. And to make things worse, police killings of Black people continue to worsen. The states of Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro have recorded upticks in the number of killings by police during the first months of 2020, according to Globo newspaper. Last year in 2019, 78% of those killed by Rio de Janeiro police were Black or Black descended. As former soccer star has said during a recent interview, there are thousands of George Floyds in Brazil. In Brazil, just like in the United States, there's a growing movement of all backgrounds fighting against systemic racism and ecological devastation, all while beating back the spread of COVID-19. Let us go now to a clip from CNN on the U.S. and Brazil leading the world in COVID-19 cases.
In the age of COVID-19, Presidents Trump and Bolsonaro are two of a kind. Both love Twitter and, by all appearances, hate wearing masks. Both are openly at odds with their nation's top doctors.
Trump is good. Bolsonaro is good.
And rely instead on the support of fans as they dismiss the pandemic as a little flu and a lot of hype.
So you don't believe COVID-19 exists at all? It's an anxiety, it's a hoax?
It could exist, this pro-Bolsonaro YouTuber tells me, but if it exists, it is weak.
Deadly.
No.
He sounds just like his president, who, when asked about his nation passing China in fatalities, said, so what? I mourn, but what do you want me to do? I can't work miracles. But the pot and pan protests that now ring out every time he goes on TV are just one sign of a nation at odds with itself. Testing is still hard to come by. And as they dig mass graves from Amazonia to Rio, some experts believe the official 1.6 million infections reported could be 12 to 16 times higher. And yet, the big cities are opening up, just as Bolsonaro uses his veto power to water down new laws to protect the public, ones that would make mask wearing mandatory in churches, schools, shops, and prisons.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Science is being ignored in this government as it has never been before.
Natalia Pasternak is a microbiologist who lobbies for more science in government policy and is among the many who were horrified when Bolsonaro fired his respected health minister for advancing quarantines. A loyal general with no healthcare experience is now running the nation's pandemic response.
Are we going to be able to care for these people? I mean, will there be hospitals for everyone? Will there be ventilators for everyone? We never reached the situation that they reached in Italy, where the doctor is forced to choose the person that gets the ventilator. I hope we never come to that, but I'm afraid we might.
All righty. Just a scary thought there. I'd like to welcome our guest. Vinnie Overbeck has been the coordinator of the World Forest Movement since 2011, a global network supporting forest-dependent communities in their struggles to defend their territories in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. He is based in the Brazilian town of Vitória in the Espírito Santo state. Before engaging with the World Rainforest Movement, Vinnie has worked for many years with networks and organizations in Brazil supporting communities affected by large-scale tree plantations and other large-scale agro-industrial projects. Vinnie Overbeck, welcome.
Hello, Margaret.
Yeah.
Good morning to you and good morning to everyone, and thank you for the invitation.
Yes, let us start before we get into talking about the impact of COVID on indigenous people in the Amazon. Just generally, we now know that Bolsonaro, who seems to follow Trump, every step of Donald Trump, has now been diagnosed with the virus. I understand that some journalists are actually suing him for not wearing a mask. You know, he's very hesitant to wear masks. Just tell us a bit about the impact you think he has had generally in the handling of this case and its impact on vulnerable communities in Brazil. Vinnie.
Well, yeah, I think in general you can say he has had a big impact on the fact that now Brazil is on the list of countries affected by COVID-19 on the second place after the U.S. So we are in a really bad position. And I think in general you can say it is because of his, he's like denying that the problem exists and showing it all the time. To the people, he makes a lot of use of social media, besides of course the big media stations, they cover him all the time, but he has his own social media, and this social media is very much looked at by his supporters. And as you know, Bolsonaro was elected president of this country, so he has like millions and millions of Brazilians as followers. And when he gave a message like, okay, this is just a little flu and don't worry about, and if he shows on television and on Facebook and whatever social media that you don't need to use a mask, you don't need to protect, probably only some older people will get it, but most people will not get it. You spread a very confusing message if at the same time, at the time that we still had a Minister of Health that was seriously trying to do something and saying that you should use a mask, that you should protect yourself, that you should keep social distance from other people. And this is not a simple flu, this is a very serious disease. You get a very confusing message to the people, and I can experiment that in the neighborhood, in town, where part of the people, they take it serious, but a big part of the people, they just have not protected themselves. And this is the reason, one of the reasons, that nowadays we are in such a bad situation. So I think it's very crazy. It's very mad what has happened, that like this Minister of Health that took it serious and was every day, like in most countries, going to television to inform people what was going on. He sort of got mad about that. He didn't like that, and he dismissed him. So it's a sort of symptom in his government that people that we see doing something good for the people, that people who are responsible in their post in the government, they are not very welcome in the Bolsonaro government, which is a huge contradiction for, you know, people and he himself in the first place, who should take responsibility for the big problems, be a leader, yeah, behave as a leader to deal with not a minor problem, but like this very major problem of COVID-19.
There have been a whole series of corruption scandals in the government there, some highly questionable, for example, but certainly that has seemed to be impacting the Bolsonaro administration as well, as is here in the United States. Indeed, I have some breaking news, Vinny, I'd just like to share with our audience, which is that the U.S. Supreme Court has issued its decision in one case involving subpoenas for Donald Trump's financial records. They issued a 7-2 decision that Trump's tax returns and business records must be turned over to a grand jury in New York. The ruling marks a defeat for Trump, who has pushed for years to hide these documents from the public. So we'll see how all of that plays out. But back to the situation, Winnie, on the ground in Brazil. In the United States, we are finding that the death rate among Black people and indigenous people, Latinx people, higher than the death rate among white people. We're also finding that a lot of people of color in low-wage jobs, a lot of them are actually frontline workers who can't afford, even during the time of a shutdown, not to be able to go out. And I wonder if there's a similar situation in Brazil. And tell us a bit, too, about the conditions in the favelas, because people in the United States, this audience may have no idea unless they've been to Brazil and actually see how things are. Vinny Overbeek.
Definitely. Definitely is the same situation. COVID-19, as I think in the U.S., it started to become a problem in the rich neighborhoods, which are very different worlds from the favelas. And because of this structural racism that also we have in Brazil, and the fact that, for example, the people who are cleaning the houses of these rich people who went to Europe or the U.S. or wherever, and they brought in the COVID-19, the people who are working in the house, they are mostly the Black people, the Black women working for very, very low salary, and they got contaminated and they took the virus to their neighborhoods because that's the only connection that actually exists. There are different worlds where people live very crowded. They cannot protect themselves. They cannot keep the social distance. It's very complicated. Another thing you already mentioned, while you know the most often white people, middle higher class, they can stay at home. They can they don't need to go out for working. They can do their home office, but it is completely different for the people in the favelas, which are majority Black people, and they need to go on the street because most of the people in Brazil, they earn their money in the informal economy, so they need to go on the street to sell something, and they need to work in a construction site without any registration, without any right, and that means that there has been like some support from the government, very tiny support for the poor people, an emergency support, but many, many millions of people who are not even registered, and most of them are the Black people, they don't have had any access to that, so they need to go out. For them, it's not an option to stay at home, to stay safe. They need to go out. So they run a bigger risk, and when they get contaminated, they have to go to the public health system that probably, as far as I know a little bit, the U.S., we have, I think, a better organized public health system. It's called the SUSE, the unique health system, and apart from that, we also have the private health system, which is more for the middle and upper class. And of course, the private health system has been able to deal better with COVID-19. So the rich people getting ill, they got access. But in the older people in the favela, they need to go to the public health system. And because of the speed of the contamination, too many people got at the hospital compared with the conditions of the public hospital. So what happened is that people died before they could get to an intensive care. Also, people went home because there was no space in the hospital and they died at home. I just saw the other day records of an investigation of how many people died at home, and it's an incredible number of thousands and thousands of people that were not registered as people who died because of the complications of COVID-19, but they just died at home. And yeah, very probably many of these people, they died of COVID-19. So there's a world of difference between the situation of the people in the favelas in terms of COVID-19 and the risk they have, and the rich, middle, and higher richer people. And the research that is being done on who has died from COVID-19, they show that a higher percentage of people from the favelas that died from COVID-19.
Bringing in the racial connection here, Winnie Overbeck, who's based in Brazil, is our guest here on Sojourner Truth, for those of you who are just joining us. But we do know that Brazil has the largest black population in the Americas, really. And, you know, a lot of people may not know that, but that is absolutely the case. And I read a quote recently by a, I suppose, a well-known soccer football player, Juninho, is that it? But he says, mm-hmm, quote, "It's inhumane to say we don't have George Floyds in Brazil. The shootings happen every day. Gay people are persecuted too, and that is one of the things I'm most angry about with the people who support Bolsonaro. However, no one can beat time. Someday, everyone will discover who you really are." I suppose talking in reference to Bolsonaro. And he also says that there the thousands of George Floyds in Brazil and thousands of others who have suffered in silence that we don't know about. Your response to that?
I think the figure is about 60,000 violent deaths in Brazil each year. And I lived a long time in favela. And if I compare the street where I live at the beginning and 15 years after, I can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 young black people who died because of violence. And in a society that simply doesn't give attention to their situation, the lack of opportunities, the lack of education, the lack of possibilities to study, and it's a cycle that reproduces itself, and it leads to the gangs in the neighborhood, the territories. It's actually for me a very important sign of resistance. They are treated as criminals. I don't know in the U.S., but I think it's quite similar. They are portrayed on television, on the radio, as the criminals that need to go to prison. And it's no surprise that we have one of the biggest prison populations in the world, and most of the people in prison, if you go there, they are black people. And are black people more violent? Are they stealing more than the white people? You know, why is this happening? So I think that the angel of Juninho, I totally agree with that. And also, how can we live in this country without talking about it? How can we do, because now there's a lot of talk in COVID-19 times about going back to normality, and here in Brazil especially, but in some way the whole world, have we ever been in a normal world where you have structural racism? Is that normal? What is normal about that? So I think COVID-19 is more of a symptom, another symptom of the emergency that we are experiencing. And one of the emergencies in Brazil is the structural racism, the violence, the death of especially young black people, that is happening in a very silent way, very invisible way. And the government completely ignoring it. Actually, one of the measures of Bolsonaro government in these times of COVID-19, where, while Bolsonaro was ignoring it, the state governors and the mayors, they were taking measures for social distancing, and they were fining people who were breaking the rules. But at the same time, Bolsonaro, he signed a decree to increase the possibility of buying arms in circulation. And there's a very close relation between the fact that in Brazil so many arms in circulation, just like in the U.S., and so much violence is happening all the time, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my reaction, basically.
Yeah, and ABC reported that a 14-year-old boy was one of more than 600 people killed by police in the state of Rio in the first months of this year, and that's almost double the number of people killed by police over the same period in the entire U.S., which has 20 times Rio's population. So you could see how widespread the problem is. Winnie Overbeck, thank you for sharing that with us. Winnie, what we're going to do is just going to take a brief station break now. When we return, I'd like to discuss a bit of the impact of COVID on indigenous people living in the Amazon, and we'll also get into a discussion about the threats not only to the Amazon but to and people living in forests, you know, which I know in some circles is controversial among at least a certain sector of environmentalists. So stay with us. We'll be right back. And the late, great Bob Marley, Burning Anna Luton. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Check out our website at www.sotrueradio.org and our handle on Instagram and Twitter at SoTrueRadio. And if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us there. We're also nationwide and worldwide on SoundCloud. And in our tradition, let's give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Claremont, Florida. And internationally, let's give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the Netherlands. And again, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And before we continue our conversation with Winnie Overbeck, we'll go to our weekly Earth Minute.
After six long years, this week the $6 billion, 600-mile Atlantic Coast Pipeline was shelved. The pipeline would have bored through mountains, destroyed 4,500 acres of forest, and crossed more than 1,500 water bodies. Construction to clear a corridor for the pipeline was initiated, even though the project was never approved. The Atlantic Coast Pipeline was environmentally devastating and blatantly racist. Virginia's Environmental Justice Committee determined the pipeline had disproportionate impacts for people of color and for low-income populations. The Freedman community of Union Hill, where a massive compressor station connected to the pipeline was planned, is 84% African-American, rural, and lower income. Ella Rose, whose home was right next door to the planned site of the compressor station, and within the zone of total destruction if it blew up, stated, "I feel that all the hard work that all of us have done was finally for good. I feel like I have my life back. I can now sleep better without the worries that threatened my life for so long." For the Earth Minute and the Sojourner Truth Show, this is Ann Peterman from Global Justice Ecology Project.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Our guest during this hour, Winnie Overbeck, who is the coordinator of the World Forest Rainforest Movement. I beg your pardon, Vinny, I keep saying forest movement. It's the World Rainforest Movement, a global network supporting the forest-dependent communities in their struggles to defend their territories in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. He is based in Brazil in the state of Espírito Santo. Vinny, let us go to a clip now on the impact of COVID-19 on indigenous people in Brazil, particularly those living in the Amazon region.
In much of Brazil, not only has it not reached a peak, but rather it is spreading to places that have far weaker public health services than in the main cities, places that don't have emergency care units or other basics. And in a country as large as Brazil, you can't just move patients to places with better care.
One of those remote places, of course, is the Amazon rainforest, where hundreds of indigenous people have already been infected. Brazil's public prosecutor is investigating charges presented by indigenous rights advocates that last week's visit to some of the most isolated tribes, like the Yanomami, by members of the defense ministry, has spread the virus. The ministry refutes the charges.
How can an organization that is concerned about indigenous people be upset by us giving medical treatment and food to indigenous peoples?
But world-renowned Brazilian photographer and Amazon preservationist Sebastião Salgado says that's absurd.
The Brazilian authorities know, have known, and will see again that the indigenous people don't have the antibodies to protect themselves from diseases that come from outside the forest. So the penetration into indigenous territories promoted by President Bolsonaro is really genocide.
Whether in Brazil's most remote areas or in its major cities, the spread of coronavirus remains out of control, despite measures spurred by economic pressures that would make it seem that the pandemic is almost over. Lucia Newman, Al Jazeera.
So, Winnie Overbeck, let's talk then about what is happening with indigenous people who are living in the forest of COVID. They're also under attack on a number of fronts, but there is growing concern that perhaps even an entire generation of indigenous people, a lot of the elders, may be impacted and may die. Just give us your what you know about what's going on with indigenous people in the Amazon.
Well, yeah. Since colonization started 500 years ago, what has caused most deaths in among indigenous people is definitely diseases and viruses and so on. This reference to genocide, which is happening now, this alert of Sebastião Salgado is actually happening. I would say because we have some figures from the government which are really not the right figures. The indigenous movement has also tried to organize figures, and they also, you know, they cannot calculate everything because the areas are very remote. And it's very difficult, the communication. But they have calculated until 1-2 weeks ago, at least 400 people died, especially, as you say, the elderly, which is very serious because what is happening is that the memory of the people die, and more than 11,000 indigenous persons infected. And probably these numbers are much higher, and it's true that several of these people, they have still a very restricted time of contact with the white people, with civilization, to call it like that. So they don't have the same antibodies that we have. So any flu is most often much more mortal, much more dangerous for them. And this requires, a very strong response of the government, of the authorities, a different treatment. And what we have seen since the first day of Bolsonaro is that he has done everything to stop the support to indigenous peoples feel they have a specific attention in terms of healthcare. It's different from the people in general, because it's understood that these 350 people with many different cultures, they need a specific treatment. And this has been destroyed, you can say, since the first day of Bolsonaro. So we already had that situation of a very weak healthcare when COVID-19 arrived. And COVID-19, it demands a very specific sort of communication with the people, because they have their own rituals, they have their own way of, you know, burying their people, often in rituals that take days or weeks, and it needs a very sensitive, it needs a very careful conversation, dialogue, communication with the people to explain the dangers. It's not just distributing folders. That's what the government says that they have been doing, you know. It's very different, and the people are not there to do it, because there is he has destroyed the system as much as he can. So what is happening now is like trying to do something, but there should be done much more. The indigenous movement has gone to court to demand that the government takes its responsibility. And the other day, the Supreme Court, they decided that the government should take its responsibility. But still, what will happen in practice, we don't know. There was a law in the parliament asking also for specific attention for the indigenous communities and also for the black Quilombola communities. These are rural black communities that also have rights to their land, that have a different sort of life than a specific culture compared with other communities in town. And what Bolsonaro did, he gave his veto on the most important elements of this law that was approved by the parliament. So he is trying to do everything, to do nothing, and to make life more difficult. And the other problems, especially in COVID-19 times, that is affecting the indigenous peoples, is that since the first day of Bolsonaro, they were already having more invasions in their territories, especially loggers and what we call grileiros. This is the Portuguese term for sort of people that try to appropriate of the land in an illegal way and produce illegal land titles. And the activity of these kind of people has only increased, and they are taking advantage of COVID-19 to do more invasions, because at the same time, during COVID-19, less people of the control agencies of the government are in the field because of the social distancing and everything. And at the same time, the communities, they don't have, you know, the capacity to react. They don't have the capacity to mobilize like they used to do. In April, for example, every year we have a huge mobilization of indigenous peoples in the capital, and they protest at the door of the president, at the door of the parliament, for their rights. And this year they could not do that, and they cannot defend their territories. And at the same time, Bolsonaro, from the first day of his government, and especially during these difficult times of COVID-19, taking advantage to try to approve new rules, new laws that are very bad for indigenous people, that are very bad for the protection of the Amazon, making the life of these illegal land stealers and these loggers more easy. So that is a little bit the situation I can describe from what I can perceive of what is happening.
Right. And Vinny, before we continue with this, there's another breaking news, another Supreme Court decision. They have kept a hold on Donald Trump's financial records from Congress. Congress had been seeking them for more than a year. It's a 7-2 ruling and returns the case to lower courts with no clear prospect for when the case might ultimately be resolved. So it's a kind of a short-term victory for Trump, who has strenuously sought to keep his financial records private. And the decision came shortly after the court upheld a prosecutor's demand for Trump's tax returns as part of a criminal investigation that includes hush money payments to women who claim they had affairs with Donald Trump. The source of that is AP. So now back to what we're discussing on this show. If you're just joining us, by the way, our guest is Brazil-based Winnie Overbeck, and we are discussing the impact of COVID-19, but also deforestation. The impact on indigenous communities is where we are right now. And Winnie Overbeck, just the relationship then, because there is some controversy about people living in forests, and even in some cases blaming people who live in forests for deforestation or somehow harming the forest, which to me doesn't seem to make sense, because if you live in the forest, it seems as though you do want to preserve this. But this is happening not only in the Amazon, but also on the continent of Africa and also Asia. And you have the developments of these mega tree plantations. I was reading about one that was funded by Norway, maybe an NGO or some such in Norway, in Tanzania in particular. Tell us, just make those connections for us and the problems with these tree plantations and the environment, but also of people living in the forest and their right to live in the forest. Winnie Overbeck.
Yeah, well, this is an interesting question in times of COVID-19, and what we see a sort of bigger discussion about the need to protect forests, the need to the need to stop deforestation because of a supposed relationship between increased deforestation and an increased risk of these virus outbreaks that we are experimenting now with COVID-19. And there is this relation, of course, because the virus that we have, the COVID-19, it's coming from animals, and animals, wild animals, they inhabit forest. But at the same time, we are very concerned. It's good to investigate this kind of thing, but what we are most concerned about is how it's being used now. And if we look at all the forest areas, if you look at the situation of forest-dependent peoples, we are very concerned, because this year, 2020, the big international conservation NGOs that supposedly are concerned about the protection of forest, they call this a super year, you know, for the forest, for nature, because after the climate agreement, this big agreement that was signed in Paris in 2015 to supposedly combat climate change, there was in 2017 signed a global deal for nature to complement the Paris Agreement. And what these big conservation NGOs propose is to protect half of the world's and the world's surface, so the land and the oceans, as protected areas. And this year we would have big conferences about biodiversity, about forest, and they would try to approve that by 2030, 30% of the world's land and oceans would be protected areas. There are two problems here, and I come back to COVID-19 afterwards to make it the relations clear. One is that the analysis is actually wrong, because if you talk about creating protected areas, you are looking for areas that are forest areas, and where there are forests in the world, and that is our experience of 35 years of supporting communities that depend on forests. Where we have forests in the world is because there are communities. And as you say yourself, they are not interested to destroy the forest. They are there because they need the forest. It's part of their life space. It's part of their livelihood. And they have no interest at all to destroy it. But what you see happening in this, you know, in this fever of creating more protected areas, and nowadays, because of COVID-19 and the supposed relation, you know, between forest destruction and the new coronavirus, these organizations somehow they are trying to take advantage of this to push for more protected areas where they are looking for forest areas, and they are blaming most often the communities who are there for the deforestation that is happening. And they practice some deforestation, but it's a traditional activity. And at the same time, these big conservation NGOs, they are, you know, they have strong relations with big corporations that are actually responsible for the big mining, the big logging, the big soya plantations in the Amazon, the big meat production. And these are the real causes of deforestation, with a number of underlying causes, very complex underlying causes related to the whole our whole economic globalized system. So that is a little bit the main thing we are concerned about at this moment. And it's this vision of protected areas without people. It's a very, you know, colonial view. It has a very strong aspect of environmental racism, you know, and it comes from this national park idea that actually was born in the U.S. I think years ago, you know, with the good savage, the indigenous person who can stay there but don't touch nature. You know, nature is there to observe for the ecotourism. So you see, for example, in these protected areas, luxury resorts for people to observe nature. In our, you know, Western tradition of separating nature from people, we take a distance, we look at it. You know, it's very different from the forest dependent people who are part of the forest. They actually don't have really, in many indigenous languages in the Amazon, they don't have a name for forest because they cannot separate forest from themselves, you know. So that's a very big concern. At the same time, that a very important source of these fierce outbreaks that can lead to pandemics is actually industrial animal farming, industrial livestock farming, which is also a cause of deforestation, which needs a lot of food inputs like soy, which is destroying forest. And I don't see much debate about that, you know. It's about this huge animal farms, a lot of them in the U.S., a lot of them in China, a lot of them in Europe, and a lot of them in Brazil too. Thousands and thousands of pigs and other animals for industrial processing and meat production. And they are like also a very important source of virus outbreaks, but I don't see a debate to change that. What I see is a lot of discussion that we need to protect more forest, we need to, you know, we need to conserve more, but it's very important if we do that to make a good analysis what is causing deforestation. They are not the people, not the indigenous people in the Amazon and other communities living with the forest. Are there different causes? At the same time, if we want to protect forest, we should do it together with the people on the ground, and that is what we have been trying to work for 35 years now. But it seems that it's more than needed to do this discussion, public discussion nowadays, with the threats coming and COVID-19 actually, you know, being used or abused as an argument to create more of these protected areas. Because for people, it's very bad if their forests get destroyed by a mining company, but it's also very bad for them if they cannot access anymore their forest where they depend on for their rituals, for their food, for their medicine, for many things. So
yeah.
I think I leave it for now because we can talk a long time around this. Yeah.
We could, and we'll likely need to carve out a kind of a part two in-depth discussion with you, Vinnie Overbeck. This discussion is really so important because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there does need to be a change, a total change of priorities, where the caring of people, but also the caring of the environment, are really the priorities. And I love what you said about indigenous people in the Amazon not having a word for forests and not being able to separate the forest from themselves, and contrast that with a kind of a colonial view, even in Western environmentalists, as you say, you know, wanting to observe nature rather than live in nature. And just quickly, when the fires were happening in Australia last year, those devastating fires, I did speak with someone there and really took a look at the way Aboriginal people, Indigenous people in Australia, have dealt with fires, have actually starting fires as part of helping to control growth, etc., but doing it in a sustainable way. And they were seeing that the areas that use the traditional Indigenous way of burn, right, as a method of actually environmental protection, didn't experience the massive out of control fires in other areas. So that really shows, as you say, the importance of really working with Indigenous people and respecting and looking at those ways and realizing that it really is a totally different mindset, that you are part of nature, you live with nature and in nature, as opposed to either just observing nature on the one hand or abusing nature on the other hand. I wanted to ask you quickly too about the attacks on the Kilombola land, and we only have like 2 minutes. Maybe you could tell us what are Kilombolas and what's happening with attacks on those lands, Vinnie Overbeck.
Yeah, the Kilombolas are, you know, they are consider themselves as Kilombolas. They are 3,000 communities that we know about in the country. They came up in the time that, you know, the black people were forced to come to Brazil to work on the plantations as slaves and this and that, and they created their own communities. It is a sort of resistance, and it was recognized in 2003 that they were traditional communities. They had the right on their lands, and nowadays the government is doing everything to take away, to cancel this legal recognition, but they resist in many places. In several places they have got recognized their land titles, but in many places it's a very difficult struggle. They have their national organizations to struggle for their rights, and it's very important to mention because, as you said, Brazil is the second country in the world with the biggest black population after Nigeria, and it is very important for us, I think, for the country, for its identity, that these communities continue, and we support them in their struggles, and they organize more and more to get their lands back and recognized. But as I said, at this moment, it's a very difficult struggle in these very, very adverse times with Bolsonaro in the presidency. Yeah.
Right. Well, Vinnie Overbeck, we really appreciate you taking time to be with us and look at your schedule, because we do want to continue this conversation with you. I'd like to talk more about the work of your organization, the World Rainforest Movement, its work on the continent of Africa as well as Asia. We appreciate you. We appreciate your work. Thank you for joining us, Vinnie Overbeck. Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Okay, we are out of time, I'm afraid. Today's show produced by me, that's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank our audio engineer, Kiana Williams, our assistant producer, Romero Funes. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, and y'all, please stay safe.
Pra fumar, menino, como eu gostei. É pedra, é pedra. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience.